From Bureaus Worldwide, this is FSN.
Yeah, creepy Joe Biden, eh? Creepy Joe Biden taking on Donald Trump this November in the US presidential election. How you doing? Are you warm? It's warm in the UK today.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It is, and it's 20 degrees here in Salford in Greater Manchester. What's that 20 degrees in Yankee speak? It's 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit, is it? It's 1,000 degrees. Anyway, hope you're cool. This is your Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford, as you just heard. The Twitter thing has been restored, so you can tweet the programme at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. And I'm really looking forward to hearing from you. We have two terrific guests today. Gerald Celente, the legendary publisher of the Trends Journal, joins us live from New York City in about 25 minutes' time. And then telecoms engineer Mark McFarlane will be on the programme in hour two. I met Mark through Mark Windows of Windows on the World. Mark's got a very interesting take on where 5G is ultimately heading, the Internet of Things and beyond. So it's a decent old show, I think, for a Wednesday. Let's just bloody well get on with it then. Shut your big mouth, you're saying, and get on with the programme. That's all right, I'll do it.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yeah, it's a thing of beauty, this weather. A thing of B-E-A-U-T-E. So get out in the sun, get some vitamin D for yourself. Get out in the sun, I tells you. And get some vitamin D, get some vitamin D, some vitamin. Fucking Yanks. How you doing? You all right? Oh, lovely jubbly. 5 past 5 it is. Gerald Celente, Mr. Celente to his friends. And Mark McFarlane, the guests on today's programme. You can't tweet me, how you? So what happened was, I didn't delete the tweet, and I think the people who run the Twitter appeal system didn't want to do the appeal, so they deleted my tweet from the weekend and, without warning, restored our access to Twitter. Now, we don't care because Twitter, I don't care really. All right, so let's just move on, shall we? 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit today. 1,000. Right, there's quite a bit to talk about before we welcome Gerald back to the programme. Before I go any further, the Guardian newspaper reports today that the Jewish Chronicle and Jewish News are to close and all of the staff there to be made redundant because the parent company ran out of money over this coronavirus pandemic, which is devastating the media industry. Some outlets in the news have furloughed journalists in the hope of riding out the coronavirus crisis. But sources at the Jewish Chronicle say that staff were informed the parent company ran out of money and couldn't continue trading. And The Guardian says, and The Guardian is right, that a collapse in print sales and advertising revenue is hitting news outlets hard, with many local and independent newspapers facing severe financial strain. It's a grim day for the staff of the Jewish Chronicle and the Jewish News because it is the start of the festival of Passover. Now, I say what I mean and I mean what I bloody well say, and I always have done. The Jewish Chronicle has said some very unkind things about me and has encouraged the Guardian and the Daily Mail to repeat unkind things about me. And the editor of the Jewish Chronicle, a guy called Stephen Pollard, I would find to be odious in the extreme. But I take absolutely no joy in the news that another print newspaper in this country is going out of business. Even though my feelings, my opinions, my outlook on life would be diametrically opposed to the editorial policy of the Jewish Chronicle. I don't laugh at it. I see a lot of people making merriment and laughing on Twitter. You need to have a hard look in the mirror and take a hard look at yourself and at your life. Laughing at the news that people are going to be out of a job. Not everybody at the Jewish Chronicle or the Jewish News is Stephen Pollard. I take no joy in it. because as repugnant as I found them to be, they're entitled to their opinion. And if you believe in free speech, you believe in free speech for everybody. So there you are. So sad news for the media business in this country. And I mean what I say, and I say what I bloody well mean, right? So I'm sorry to hear that news today. I was disgusted with them, and I wrote to them, and I said, how can you call yourself journalists if you print things about people without picking the phone up to get a response from the subject of your ire, in my case? You've hammered me. Jesus, be a journalist and ring me up and at least print my response to it. But that's only one person and one journalist. So it's bad news. All right? It's bad news. Okay. The mainstream media. It is the enemy of you and me. I know you're going to think, how ironic. How ironic. I'm talking about the broadcast media today. It is our enemy. But don't take up arms against it. Continue to write vitriolic letters. But don't go any further than that. It's a mass brainwashing machine, isn't it? It's operating 24/7 now. It's relentless. And it serves to dumb people down to a place where we are more easily hypnotised. Or to put it better, to dumb us down to a place where we are more suggestible. To accept wholesale, for example, the coronavirus lockdown measures and the inevitable mandated vaccine, etc. That's why the media is your enemy. The presenters and the producers, not necessarily your enemy. But the industry, particularly the broadcast media as a whole, is working against the interests of the people. Listen to Good Morning Britain this morning. You'll know Good Morning Britain because it's fronted these days by Piers Morgan, formerly of the Daily Mirror, and Susanna Reid, formerly of the BBC. It's a magazine programme which heavily focuses on news coverage. Morgan is a poor man's Bill O'Reilly. Spends most of his time shouting people down and insulting them. As if that's new, right? Listen to a clip of it this morning. The pathos, the sentiment, the emotion. You'll hear Susanna Reid introducing a segment about foreigners who came to the UK, including Hassan, who's a Syrian refugee. And these foreigners are volunteering on the front line. Again, the language, the front line, right? Volunteering on the front line to keep us safe, these foreigners. Now, this is shocking stuff what you're about to hear, but I'm beginning to think that more and more people listening to me don't see it as shocking. They have become so immune to it and dumbed down to it, I suppose, a better way of putting it. So have a listen to this, and, well, it's vaudeville. There you are, there's that word again. Piers Morgan. But you want to hear Susanna Reid introduce this segment, and, well, it beggars belief.
Many of those risking their health and lives to care for others are foreign nationals, and we are joined now...
Hang on. Let's give this the treatment it deserves. We've got a bit of emotional music. Music. So let's do that. Let's get some music on. And let's hear Susanna Reid on GMB this morning.
Many of those risking their health and lives to care for others are foreign nationals, and we are joined now by two international NHS heroes. Hassan Akkad joins us from central London. He is a BAFTA award-winning documentary maker, and he started cleaning the COVID-19 ward at Whipps Cross Hospital last week. And in Scunthorpe is Filipino staff nurse Fritz Martinez, who says that if they're scared to go out, no, they have to help other people. Very good morning to you both.
Morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hassan, just tell us, you have come from Syria. You are a documentary maker, but you have found yourself in a position where you want to help the NHS in this fight.
Thank you so much for having me. England has been home for me for the past 4 years. The people of this country have welcomed me with an open arm. And since the pandemic hit Britain, I honestly couldn't, like everyone, I just couldn't I couldn't sleep. I was thinking about it the whole time, and I was desperate to help. I looked everywhere, and I found out that my local hospital, which is literally a 10-minute walk from where I live, is desperate for cleaners. And I haven't professionally cleaned before, but I thought that I could give it a try, and I signed up, went for an interview, and they gave me a thorough training, and I have been disinfecting the COVID wards for a week now. And it's it's an honor, and it's literally an honor to be able to be in a position where I can look, because the people look after the patients who are technically my neighbors because they live here, and also to look after the incredible NHS staff who are doing everything in their power to cure these patients and to help them go through this.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Gorgeous. Glorious. Right. Wonderful. Time for a leading question. Let's make this a gorgeous moment. Back to Susanna. The leading question to end all leading questions.
Do you know what, Hassan? I mean, you won awards, you'd made films, you'd done documentaries. Do you think that cleaning the COVID wards is one of the most important jobs of your life?
What do you think Hassan will say? The Syrian refugee turned award-winning filmmaker, now scrubbing the floors in an NHS hospital. Well,
without a shadow of a doubt,
yes!
Of course.
Okay, here's more of it.
It's literally I think it's the best job I've ever done. I was an English teacher, and I made...
He was an English teacher, now documentary filmmaker, Syrian refugee. The best job he's ever done is clean hospital wards for the NHS. Bashar al-Assad must be laughing his ass off.
Documentaries, but honestly, the badge that they gave me, this NHS badge that they gave me, it's like a badge of honor to be able to
badge of honor
to be able to be on the front line and helping during this difficult time. It's an honor. That's all I can say.
Hassan, we take it for granted a bit in this country. We certainly have done until now that we have this National Health Service, which is free for all. Coming from a country like Syria, when you see how
this is mind control now, you're listening to.
What do you make of it?
I am amazed by how incredible everyone is at the NHS, especially at the hospital.
He's amazed by how incredible everyone is, especially at the hospital. They're all brilliant, all magnificent. Let him wind it up here. No, we won't. We'll just move on. GMB this morning. But I think more and more people increasingly are susceptible to that and don't question it in any way. You know, don't in any way disseminate it. Don't move it around in their minds and think, what the hell is this I'm watching? What's going on? Let's talk about Bill Gates for a minute. He was on the PBS News Hour yesterday talking about vaccines and the prospect of giving people a vaccine before life goes on. Before returning to normal, before congregating again, before moving on with our lives. Well, vaccine, here's Bill Gates.
The vaccine is critical because until you have that, things aren't really going to be normal. They can open up to some degree, but the risk of a rebound will be there until we have very broad vaccination.
Well, and you've said it may take, according to the scientists you work with and you talk to all the time, it could take up to a year and a half to get that vaccine. What are you saying literally that it could be the fall of 2021 before Americans can be safe from this COVID-19?
Now, whoever put this video online edited his answer, but this is what he says. He speaks for a couple of seconds. They edit that out, but this is what he actually says.
But there will be some things where the benefit to the risk, like large public gatherings, may not resume until broad vaccination has taken place.
Yeah. Large public gatherings, going to see a football match, going to see a concert, mightn't take place until a vaccine has been broadly distributed. This is where it ends. Later this year, maybe early next year, we will be told, and nobody will argue with it, we'll be told that from now on in, you can't enter big public spaces or you can't congregate, be part of a large public gathering unless we know that you've been immunised. This is where it's going. Some of us have been talking about this for a long time now, and here it is. Vaudeville. Gerard Lyons was on Sky News yesterday afternoon. I recorded the clip and was intending to play it for you last night on the radio programme, but I got waylaid. Well, I didn't get waylaid, but we ran over time. I couldn't play it for you. But I held on to it because it's very important. So who is Gerard Lyons? Well, he's a prominent British economist, and he is working with British scientists and virologists. They've come up with a very novel way to deal with lockdowns and emerging from them. How do you communicate to the public about when a lockdown is coming to an end or about to begin? This is Gerard Lyons, a very prominent economist here and somebody who is now working with the pharmaceutical industry to come up with a way that we can all understand where we stand with lockdowns. Feast your ears on this.
What I, with Professor Paul Ormerod, have done is outline that it's only once the scientists are convinced we are past the worst that one can then have a traffic-like process in terms of red, amber, green.
Where have we heard that before? Red, amber, green. Terrorism, anyone?
So that we know how to unlock the lockdown in a predictable way that makes sense from a scientific and health perspective, and also makes sense from an economic and business perspective as well.
Well, just give us an idea of what your red, amber and green phases would be.
Good question, Adam Bolton. What would the red stand for, the amber stand for and the green stand for in this future system whereby we, the public, like Muppets, like we do for the terror chart to see what's, you know, where we are with terrorism on the terror alert colour-coded chart. Now we'll have a traffic light system. Good question, Adam. Tell us what red, amber and green stand for.
Well, the idea about them is that people can understand them. The red is that people need to stop doing things that they were doing before the virus. Therefore, it's a gradual unlocking. Some more shops will be open, but many things will still not be allowed. Amber is the next phase, and it shows that one still needs to be careful. Then one can allow people to start travelling in cars, but not to crowded places. In wow. that stage, schools might be able to be reopened. It's only green when the medical experts give the all clear that we can return to mass sporting events and places of worship. The important thing is that the lockdown was necessary to bring the virus under control.
Amy?
What kind of fuckery is this?
So presumably you'll have an app, because everybody in the world will have an app on a smartphone, which everybody in the world will be required to have. And the app will tell you whether it's red, amber or green. And you'll do what you're told. As he said, each colour will correspond to a set of rules and you'll just do it. Isn't it wonderful? The traffic light system. I'll see your traffic light system, Gerard, and I'll raise it. Apparently, Alvin Stardust has done fuck all for ages. He's mad for work. Why don't you give him a call? And when anybody dares to leave their house, to walk their dogs, to go to the gym, Alvin Stardust will police it.
Hey, you must be out of your tiny minds.
Your tiny minds.
Keep your wits about you and keep looking and listening. Take it from me. Be smart. Be safe.
Yes, Alvin Stardust will police the traffic light system in the near future. It's 22 minutes past the hour. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford. A very warm Salford. I hope you're enjoying the weather. Hope you're not gone too mad. Went a bit mad there, did you? Hi to Patrick Vidian there. Hi to Moinga. Hi to Kelly in Ireland. And Liz says, Richie, did you get your letter in the post from 10 Downing Street? We did get a letter. A very formal looking one. We haven't opened it. Haven't done anything with it, really. I think it's on the table, just inside the door, I think. Hi to Cave Hillbilly, who says, Bill Gates is like a turd that won't flush. Don't you mean third? Hi to John Stott. Gates is basically Ernst Stavro Blofeld, says John. Rather creepy individual, isn't he, Bill Gates? Hi to David Stanford. Thanks for the advice, Gates. excuse me, David Stanford tweets, thanks for the advice, Dr. Gates. Oh, you're not a doctor. No, he isn't. Mad Monk is on Twitter. It's a shame the media wasn't behind the people when the government kept cutting the budget. When the government was closing health centres and hospitals. Absolute propaganda and hypocrisy, says Mad Monk. By the way, that Alvin Stardust gag, if you're not over 42, you won't get that. Got to be a minimum age of 42 to get that reference, I think. Maybe I'm wrong. Hi to Susan, who saw her first butterfly this season. Very few bees, though, so far, she says. Way down on the last few years for this time. Well, I'm going to give you a bit of hope, Susan. I've seen plenty of bees in the last few days. Plenty. No, I mean that, really. I've seen plenty of big, fat, old, gorgeous-looking, beautiful bumblebees. I've seen loads. So I hope that, you know, maybe balances you not seeing too many there. All righty, 24 minutes past the hour then. Keep those tweets coming in. It is at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. You know the Twitter handle by now. For the crack, let's hear from Norman Brennan. Norman Brennan is a former policeman. He's getting a bit mad on talk radio. He was talking about people who are coughing on the police and claiming that they have coronavirus. And he wants them to be tased. But he says a bit more than that. It's all gone a bit mad on the radio these days. Former police officer Norman Brennan.
Sadly, assaults on police officers have been going up over the last decade. People have always spat at us, kicked us, punched us, and unfortunately, more often now, pull a knife out on us. But we are talking equivalent to probably World War III, but not in the conventional sense, but in the sense that here is a virus going around. Our Prime Minister, with top scientists and medical experts, have seen abroad coming our way to such an extent they have all but closed the country down. Now, police officers, the National Health Service, the Fire Brigade, the Army are all working as one big team. And you would have thought, but wrongly, that the whole country, including criminals and those that have contempt for law and order, would stay in, go out, so long as they're complying with the rules.
What did he say?
They have all but closed the country down.
What does he say here? This is absolute vaudeville.
Now, police officers, the National Health Service, the Fire Brigade,
all working together,
the Army, are all working as one big team. And you would have thought...
You would have thought...
but wrongly, that the whole country, including criminals and those that have contempt for law and order, would stay in, go out, so long as they're complying with the rules.
Thank God he's not walking the beat anymore, eh? You'd have nothing in your feckin' houses. Your cars would be gone. The clothes on your back would be robbed. PC Norman. Hey, PC Norman, why weren't you on patrol? Well, I thought the criminals would stay in, you see. Because there's a bit of a virus going around. But can you believe it, can you? Can you believe that criminals are not doing what they're told by the police? Ah, it's vaudeville.
And not get involved in crime. We've heard.
You'd have thought that criminals just wouldn't get involved in crime at this time. You know? The Italian mafia in the UK, the Irish mafia in the UK, the Jewish mafia in the UK, coming together in a very Don Corleone moment. The five families coming together at a dinner in Blackpool Tower, maybe. Right, lads. Right, no more activities now because of the coronavirus. Mother of divine Jesus. 27 minutes past the hour. This is your Richie Allen radio show. It is live. These are the Monkees. The Monkees. Yes, 29 minutes past the hour. The Monkees. I've probably told the story before, but I won't tell it again. It's about you two back in the Dandelion Market in Dublin, years and years and years and years ago, when they were nobody. And they were playing gigs to five and six people that would stand there and watch them. And we've got an amazing sense of humour, us Irish. And nobody can put you down, burst your bubble better than an Irishman. That's a fact. That is a geopolitical, historical fact. Nobody is a bigger smart arse than the Irish guy. Anyway, Bono sings, U2 sing their first song. They're nobodies now. They're 17 years of age. And Bono stops and addresses the six people there. And he says, we're called U2 and we're a punk band. And a guy, there's a voice from the distance in the background says, there's more punk in the Monkees. Oh, Jesus. I guess you had to be there. But I... That never fails to make me giggle. Right, let's call Gerald Celente, shall we? Let's get him on the line. You are, again, with the Richie Allen Radio Show. It is live on multiple platforms. Fab Radio 2 in the great city of Manchester, triggerwarning.tv, my website, and the programme is always live on tunein.com. Lots of places to hear it. It is archived on Spotify, iTunes, Podomatic, and again, many other places. I'm really happy that my guest we've got him for about 20, 25 minutes, has agreed to join the programme. It's been a while since he was on. I missed, obviously, much of the last 6-7 weeks with my own illness, so I'm thrilled that we've got him on the programme. You know that my word is solid gold. When I recommend that you subscribe to the Trends Journal, I mean it. It's a magnificent publication. It's published weekly, and Gerald Celente and his team have been accurately predicting things. Economic trends, of course, but also the geopolitical events coming down the line. They've been doing that for years successfully. And I'm thrilled to bits that the great man himself is live on the line to us from New York City. Mr. Celente, Gerald, how are you? Welcome back to the programme.
Well, thanks for having me on. I'm sorry you weren't feeling well.
I was out for ages. And look, we're not going to talk about that at all. But I did have this, I think, whatever this is, the horrendous lung issues. It was a very bad thing. It was touch and go for a while. And I was in a bad way. But I'm great now, thank heavens. Before we talk about this week's edition of the Journal, which is an absolutely compelling read, and it's a read that I think everybody should look at. I'm going to tweet out links to where people can subscribe. Before we talk about that, what have you made of it? I mean, it's just been, to me, it's even taken me by surprise. I've been listening to you for years. You've been talking about these things. What's your feeling about this? Well, how do you feel about what's going on?
It's way overblown. And you go back to the Trends Journal and go back to our end of January issue, and the headline read, here we go, coronavirus, 106 dead in China, 1.4 billion still alive.
Yeah,
the new black plague. The point that I'm making, I'm going back to late January. They were hyping this. 106 people dead in China, and you're telling me about this? Out of 1.4 billion people? And they say, well, you know, 3,500 or 5,000 died, but they're lying. You know, 50,000, 100,000 died. Okay, 100,000 out of 1.4 billion? These numbers added up to nothing. Oh, in Italy, you know, 14,000 people died. Yeah, 14,000 people died. The flu season hit early. Then the coronavirus went into it. And you look at all the data, the people that are dying are elderly with previous chronic conditions. It's everywhere. The same numbers are everywhere. So now, as we're speaking, and I will look it up at this moment, we have the grand total dead in the world of 85,445 people. So in real numbers, you know, how many people, you know, does that add up to? What percent of the people? So the percent is 0.001078%.
Wow, not even 0.001%. Not even 0.001%. Is that right?
That's right. And then in the United States, we have, let's see what that number is over here. We have 13,088 out of a population of 330 million. And again, the facts are there. When this thing hit the U.S., it hit nursing homes in the state of Washington. Elderly, chronically ill people are dying. The numbers came out. New Orleans has one of the highest rates of deaths. And the reasons are, again, same thing. Well, obesity, diabetes, former lung disease. Now, 13,088 people died in the United States. Headline news, numbers skyrocketing. Out of 330 million equals 1/40 of 1%.
Wow. And they based the lockdown measures, and we're going to talk about those now, on those statistics. You talked about it affecting people infirm, we would say the very elderly, and the people with the chronic health conditions. And you're absolutely right, because when you forensically, as you do all the time, look at the information, you see it's the people whom you would expect to be affected by a nasty virus or a nasty strain of flu being affected. I want to take you back to what you said about the reporting on the 160 deaths out of Wuhan. That was enough to convince you, Gerald, going back to January, that the fix was in. Because why else would they be bloody talking about that unless they knew something was coming?
Because people believe the media crap. And then the politicians seized on it. These are the same prostitutes they get paid to put out by their corporate pimps and their government whoremasters, that when there's a hurricane, like they're down in Florida, there's a hurricane 150 miles off the coast of Florida, and they're all dressed up in their hurricane drag, and you'll see the water blowing over the boardwalk and the tree bending over. And then you could Google it up, and you could see how phony it is most of the time, because there's this one with a guy, you know, holding on and the wind blowing and a couple walking calmly behind him. You know, and so they did the same thing with this. This is what they do. Their ratings are in the toilet before this. And now everybody's watching these imbeciles on mainstream media selling coronavirus hype.
No.
And the politicians seized upon it so they could grab more power. And now, as the latest Trends Journal just went out yesterday, the cover is "Freedom and Democracy Dead, Politicians in Control, New World Order 2020.
The Trends Journal, by the way, folks, you can subscribe to it at trendsresearch.com. It's affordable and it's packed full of brilliant writing and analysis. Thanks. No, it is. You know, I know that. You give it to me for free, kindly, but I'm not under any duress to say that. My word is important. I wouldn't say it otherwise. Look, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. For years, you've been saying this is coming down the line. Look out for this. And it does, and it happens. And that's a fact. There's no getting away from it. So trendsresearch.com. You mentioned there this power grab. And a number of people are tweeting as we speak. They're asking, is the virus an excuse for that? I mean, because some people think that they agree with everything you've said, but some people go one step further and they think that the, you know, the prostitutes and the globalists, they knew a very bad flu season was coming and that they invented this because of the power grab. Basically, what you're being asked by my listeners is, what's your view on why they used the virus? Did they use the virus as an excuse? And if they did use it as an excuse, for what? What are they using the virus as an excuse for?
They're using the virus, first of all, a bad flu season. Last year, 650,000 people died globally of the flu, according to the World Health Organization. Already in America, depending on the numbers, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have come out with estimates already that have died from this flu season in America to be somewhere between 35,000 to 58,000 people, numbers in that range. And what did I say? How many have died so far in America? 13,000 from the virus. So no, the virus isn't bringing in the numbers that they're saying. So here's the deal. The politicians are using it for their own benefit in two ways. One benefit, of course, is to give them more power. So they become dictators, basically, from the state to the cities to the governors to the presidents, prime ministers, and chancellors. The other one is very clear in front of everyone's eyes. Again, we'll only look at the facts and look at the data. Let's take India. How many people in India have died? Let me go quickly here and see. India. You ready?
Go ahead.
What's the population of India?
I'm going to guess 800 million. I wouldn't have a clue. 500 million.
1.3 billion.
Is it? Wow. Okay.
The grand total dead in India, and you know what a lovely place to how wonderful high luxury the people are living there. There's no poverty. There's no disease. Oh, only 1.3 million of them died last year of air pollution. There's no poverty. There's no tuberculosis. The water is crystal clear, right? All right. 164 people died there. This is, again, according to the numbers, the stats that anyone could look up on Worldometer. And you could look it up at the Johns Hopkins University as well. So these are the 164 people. They closed down the joint because there were riots going on continually with his new citizenship law that Modi put in place, the prime minister, with the economy declining rapidly, seven consecutive quarters of declining GDP growth, over a million unemployed workers just in the auto industry. The thing was going down the crapper. And then you take a look at the other, you ask me why they're doing it. Then you take it other look at other places like South Africa. So South Africa right now has the grand total of 13 deaths. I think they have, right off the top of my head, I know their population is around 50 million or something. 13 out of 15 million. Oh, and there's another country, and I've been to South Africa, where the people are living, I would say, at the level of Luxembourg, maybe Switzerland. All right, this is a depressed third world country, people living in poverty, filth, what they're dying of, the other diseases because of it. And you close down the whole country for 13 deaths? What am I, stupid? What am I, 6 years old? That slimy politician, the Gatsis and Girl Mamaposa, the country is going down the crapper. They were in recession. The people were demonstrating in the streets. They were demonstrating in Hong Kong. They were demonstrating in France. They were demonstrating in Chile, Peru, Bolivia, Colombia, Algeria, on and on and on. They closed down the protests. They used it to their advantage.
Tell me this. We'll talk in a second about what you're projecting in terms of what the economic damage will be for people in the next year or two based on the shutdown of the global economy. A lot of questions are coming in, right? So before we get into that, I don't want to ignore the listeners. You've got an enormous following around the world. When you come on, they pile on here, along with my audience, asking questions. One of the things that people are really bemused by is how the mainstream media, the prestitutes, as you famously labelled them, are using people like Bill Gates as their go-to man to talk about how to deal with this and to talk about medicine, when Bill Gates is patently not qualified to talk about these things. Is that a source of amusement for you, or suspicion, or, you know, does it highlight just how ridiculous this whole thing is?
No, it's they do it all the time. Let's go back to the Iraq War. Again, we wrote about this in detail in the Trends Journal. The organization called Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting put out the numbers of people who they put on the mainstream media that were for and against the war. The against the war was like 1 or 2%. So they bring on a guy that what does Gates do? He's a vaccination salesman. I mean, right? That's what he does with his money, to get people vaccinated all over the world. So, you know, that's what they call using his money for the public good. So that's why they put him on. And again, they put on who they want to put on. Everybody's quoting this guy Fauci. You know, was it F-U-C-H-K-I? What is his name? Who the hell is he? One little clown boy? One little guy he talks and everybody got to listen? The people that I know, the doctors that I know, is saying, no, there's a lot of baloney.
Before we talk about the economic projection going forward, just a word on the lockdown and how people have almost embraced it, and in such a way that the mayor of Los Angeles, who, forgive me if I'm wrong, his name might be Gassetti, Eric Gassetti, or something like that. Is that him? Yeah. He can go on television and say things that maybe would have ended his career back, you know, in the day, one time or another. He could basically threaten the population of Los Angeles and urge people to snitch on their neighbors. And he said snitches won't mean stitches anymore. Snitches will mean riches. I mean, did you? I mean, I know you saw this coming, but even you must, even though you knew it was coming, you must be sitting there sometimes after work, coffee in hand, Gerald, and you must look at guys like him and think, there was a time, man, when you'd have been run out of town on a rail for saying that, but now people are embracing it, Gerald.
Well, look at the same thing with this guy Cuomo that everybody likes in New York. This guy had a popularity rating of about 35% before this. This is a little daddy's boy, Andy Cuomo, the daddy's boy, the tough-looking guy with the daddy's boy, renames the Tappan Zee Bridge the Mario Cuomo Bridge. Who the hell are you? What do you think, your father's better than mine? These little boys born on third base and thought they hit a home run. You got them all over the place. Trump, he'd be a nobody if daddy wasn't there before him. Look at the little garçons you got over there, Macron over there in France, little Johnson nobodies guys. All these little people are members of the club. And little Chrissy Cuomo, his brother, they got him on CNN all the time. He got the virus, and there he's showing him from his home, I'm sick, blah, blah, blah. How come you're not in the hospital dying? You're saying everybody's dying? What the hell? I got to see this piece of shit out there.
Yeah.
I got to watch him. I don't watch any of it, but it keeps coming up on the news.
You can't
so what I'm
it.
Saying to you, as George Carlin used to say, it's one big club and you're not in it. These are the same murderous bitches and bastards. You got to be equal. That send us to war based on lies, that rob us of our money. Look, look at the deal that the Federal Reserve is doing, dumping all this money into the big corporations. And they were worried about this other jerk, Bernie Sanders. Oh, if he gets elected, it'll be socialism. Guess what? You got socialism for the rich right in front of everybody's eyes and capitalism for we the little people.
You talk about these packages here in this country, several hundred billion pounds, and that's just the beginning. It's been borrowed through government bonds sold to the Bank of England. You talked about the trillion plus 2 trillion, whatever it is, 3 trillion stimulus package. And of course, it'll have to be paid back for. And that's where we come around. Just before we do come around to that, Gerald Celente is our guest. I know you don't need to be told that. Nobody sounds like him anywhere in the world. TrendsResearch.com is the journal. It's published weekly. Go to TrendsResearch.com. Subscribe to it if you want to know what's coming down the line. And I can't say that. I can't be any more serious in recommending it. So look, they are bailing us out, they say, and providing a kind of a safety net for self-employed workers and for people who are furloughed. But ultimately, as you've been saying ever since we first met when I was on the radio in Spain many years ago, it'll have to be paid back. So therefore, what do you think it's going to look like for the ordinary guy in the next couple of years? What will be the economic shock of this complete shutdown of the workplaces in all of our countries? What's that going to lead to?
The greatest depression. And it's, you know, I had forecast this would happen in 2021 after the presidential election in the United States. But it's happening now. We're already in it. You look at the tourism industry. You think people are going to be back in tourism? They're so freaked out with their social distancing.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll make up numbers too. We got to stay away a meter. No, I say 2 meters. I say go screw yourself. You're making this crap up. So people are afraid to go into stadiums. They're going to afraid to go to concerts. They're going to be afraid to go into restaurants. Not only are they afraid, now all the people that are out of work, how are they going to pay their bills? They can't cut hair. They can't do anything. They get locked down. How are they going to pay their rent? How are they going to pay their mortgages? How are they going to pay their car loans? How are they going to pay anything? Well, we'll suspend it. You still got to pay it. Now the rents aren't coming in. How are the landlords going to pay the utilities? How are they going to pay their mortgages? How are they going to pay their taxes? How are they going to pay it? Restaurants, even in the best of times, are barely good times. And now they're out of bed. They're out of business. So it's one after another. Then you take these big chains that have borrowed all this dough. because they were borrowing money cheaply at nothing. And to build bigger and bigger and bigger, and now they're dead. They're closed. They're locked out. We are going to see an economic crisis, the likes of which the world has never seen before. And I'm going to make this 100% clear. History is repeating itself. Go back to the 1930s. Currency wars. Trade wars. Great Depression. World War II. Now let's fast forward 90 years. Currency wars. Those Chinese, they're lowering the value of their currency so they could export more product. Those Europeans, they're lowering the value of their euro so they could export more product. And we got to stop. We got a trade war against China. They can't. Currency wars, trade wars, greatest depression, World War III. Go back to our top trends for 2020. One of them was the New World Disorder. As I said, there were riots, protests, demonstrations, many wars going on around the world.
That's right.
Again, Hong Kong, France, Chile, Lebanon, Algeria, Peru, Colombia, one country after another, Ecuador. It was already blowing up. Now, add on to that. Oh, what were they protesting against? Corruption, violence, lack of basic standard living, going into poverty, crime. That was before this happened. When people lose everything and have nothing left to lose, they lose it. And you're going to see crime go through this skyrocket to levels you can't believe. Even people that would never think of it, never, or maybe thought of it. Now, when the businesses open up, they're going to be stealing like crazy. Murder rates, robberies, off the charts. Real estate collapse. This is going, you think you have homeless problems now? Haven't seen anything yet. These imbeciles, these low-life, slimy, garbage-picking liars, freaks, cowards, and fools, sociopathic, narcissistic politicians. And I tell everybody, Google up the definition, someone that's manipulative and devious, typically to gain advancement within an organization. Just like they take you to war without an exit strategy, they took us to war against COVID-19 without an exit strategy. And when I say the words that I use to describe the politicians, let's look back, not too far, to 2003. How could anybody with a brain bigger than a pea and cojones bigger than a mothball believe a George W. Bush or a slimy piece of, and I hope you hear this, and I will say it to your face, shit Blair, who sends them to war based on lies that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction and ties to Al-Qaeda. And then when you asked him for an exit strategy, these little arrogant pieces of garbage. Hey, you don't ask me. Don't you know who I am? I'm your president. Oh, yeah, little Georgie Bush. A little nobody piece of crap that would be nobody if his daddy and his other murderous daddy before him, granddaddy, didn't get him there. And Blair. Look at that rotten piece of crap. You won't ask me what an exit strategy is, Salenti. I am the prime minister. All right? It's repeating itself. And the people are taking the same orders from the same low-life garbage.
They're rolling out those same guys, amazingly, on UK media. It's Blair doing the rounds of the Sunday morning news programs, telling people how our lives will have to change whether we like it or not in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. Who would believe that lousy piece of murderous garbage? Who with a soul that isn't sold to Satan? And I'm a warrior for the Prince of Peace. I fight for peace. Oh, Salenti, you're raising your voice. The Prince of Peace became violent when he picked up a whip to drive the money changers out of the temple. The people that believe their murderers are souls of Satan that want to kill other people. I get a kick out of these liberals that I have up here. I'm in Kingston, New York, up in Woodstock, only 15 minutes away, with their quiche-eating grins and their balsamic smiles. Oh, Obama wasn't as bad as Bush. Oh, yeah, he didn't kill as many with that troop surge in Afghanistan.
Yeah, he did. And, yeah.
Oh, that guy Gaddafi, he got to go. I don't like that guy Assad. Quote, I'm really good at killing people in the book Double Down, when he signed off on the 4,000 people that were innocently killed with his drone strikes. They have souls of Satan to support murderers. As I see it, and the motto of the Trends Journal is, think for yourself.
That's a great way to end it. Before we part company today, though, as we should leave it there, but I want to ask you, do you think when it gets as bad as you envisage for people, that might be the turning point? If there's any hope left for humanity to take back their independence and their sovereignty and to make their communities rational, sane, lovely places for their children, will that be it? Will that, having nothing, will that be a big sea change? Will that turn people?
It's up to the individual. It's up to people to find the best within themselves and to do what they can to support liberty, love, joy, and beauty. But it starts with the individual. And listen, man, I mean, you know, I don't want to talk like, you know, I was, you know, one of the straightest cats that ever walked the earth. I mean, I pulled a lot of garbage in my day, you know.
Yeah.
You grow up and you learn. And so what I'm saying to people, rise to the highest level you can, spiritually, emotionally, physically, do the best that you can. It does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority keen on setting brush fires of freedom in the minds of men. So when enough, that's Samuel Adams, the founding fathers of America. So when enough people have it, it's kind of like that 100th monkey, you know? It just starts to happen. But the people first have to do it individually, and then it becomes collective, as the way I see it.
Go to trendsresearch.com and subscribe to the Trends Journal. You've been listening to the unique and the brilliant Gerald Salente, Mr. Salente to his friends and to his enemies, it must be said. Look after yourself in Kingston there, mate. Love having you on, and I hope you'll be back real soon. And thanks for doing what you do. Your team produces absolutely terrific work. It's a great publication, and it stood the test of time. Thanks for coming on again today.
And thank you, and thank you for all that you do.
Cheers, Gerald. The great Gerald Salente, live on the line from New York City on Wednesday's Richie Allen Radio Show, approaching 60 seconds to the top of the hour. I will be reading your comments. There are legions of them, or your comments are legion even. But before we get your comments, it's time to pop over to FSN just for the headlines. I don't think anything dramatic has happened in the last half an hour, but then again, you never know. FSN.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Simon Marks. The coronavirus death toll in New York City has risen above 4,000, and the number of infections for the entire US is now above 400,000. France is officially in a coronavirus-induced recession after the Bank of France recorded a second quarter of negative growth. And Senator Bernie Sanders is out of the US presidential race. Joe Biden will take on Donald Trump in November.
Creepy Joe Biden, eh? Who's got them roaming hands when young girls are around. That isn't libelous, that's true. It's a fact, Jack. Right, we're 6 o'clock in Salford. That's British summertime. Salford, Greater Manchester. The Richie Allen Radio Show. Europe's most listened to independent radio show. Love being with you. Thanks for being with me. Lots more to come on this programme. Lots to come. I'll read your tweets out after this from the Rolling Stones. No. The Rolling Stones on the Richie Allen Radio Show. I can't get no satisfaction. Yeah. I don't get much satisfaction. Right, lots of tweets coming in. How you doing, Gail? How you doing, Charlie? Charlie remembers listening to the Stones. I can't get no satisfaction. While driving to Donington on hot summer's day with the sunroof open with the ex-boyfriend. Off to Donington, presumably off to a festival. Donington, I've been there myself, don't you know? I've been there myself. Lots of tweets coming in. As usual, if you want to see what people are tweeting to me, you need only go onto Twitter, where it says in the top right-hand corner, search Twitter. You key in Richie Allen Show, all one word. And if you press enter, you'll see what people are tweeting to me. Alrighty. Hi to John Parsons in Salford. Compadre, a comrade of mine. How you doing, John? Hope all's well. Hi to Busy. Did I mention Susan? I did. Did I mention Chris? I did. Did I mention David? Or La Antenna? David says, Gerald is usually bang on, but the greatest depression is an underestimation. This crisis will result in a global fiscal reset, wealth grab, then everyone will be granted a cashless digital bailout for accepting the Mark of the Beast app, says La Antenna, or David. I'm pretty sure it's David. Thanks for the tweet, mate. I appreciate that. Hi to Amico. Hi to Bass Ninja. How you doing, Bass Ninja? And, yeah, keep the tweets. That's right. Keep the tweets coming in. By the way, the trigger warning guys, Hayden Hewitt and Graham Booth, are broadcasting on Trigger Warning pretty much every evening. Now, the YouTube link, and I think I got this wrong last week, making a meme for my interview with Hayden. I made a balls of it. Or as we say in Ireland, I made a Leo Rody of it. I made a Leo Rody of it. I made a balls of it. To find a trigger warning on YouTube, you need to go to youtube.com/triggerwarningTV. youtube.com/triggerwarningTV. And they're broadcasting every evening or thereabouts, sometime between 10:30 and 11 o'clock. But if you go to the YouTube channel, you will see their scheduled appearances. It will pop up that they're on. Say, for example, we're on tonight at 11. Check them out if you haven't done before. This is the Richie Allen Show. I'll be back with you in exactly 60 seconds' time.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Okay then, in about 2 minutes' time, I'll be joined by Mark McFarlane. Now, Mark has been working in telecoms for many years. He's a lovely bloke. I was watching him speaking with Mark Windows recently. We love Mark Windows. Again, windowsontheworld.net. That's windowsontheworld.net. Windows on the World on YouTube. Mark is a brilliant forensic analyst. Forensic analyst. And he gets some really interesting people on his programme, which goes out every Sunday night live on YouTube. And he's spoken with Mark McFarlane. And then Mark dropped me a line, which was lovely. And I said, let's come on. Mark has a different take on 5G and coronavirus. Now, we've talked a lot about it. I've obviously said, well, yeah, possible. Max came on. Max believes it's very possible. David Icke believes it's very possible. Some very interesting people believe that it's very possible that 5G switch on might have something to do with the virus. Now, Mark takes a different perspective on that, which is good. We have to listen to people who take a different perspective. So he's going to come on and talk about that. But he's not just going to talk about that. We're going to broaden it out to talk about the Internet of Things. What is going on with 5G? What's it all about? Where's it going? And that's, of course, that's of huge interest to me. So if you've got any comments as I'm speaking with Mark, I'll be delighted to read them out and put them to him. You need only tweet them to at Richie Allen Show. Couldn't be simpler. Tweet them to at Richie Allen Show, and I'll be glad to hear from you. So Mark has been working as a telecoms engineer for 23 years, with 20 of those years spent in cellular telecoms. And he's also, since last year, since last spring, been working in 5G installation commissioning. In fact, he's been working since last spring in 5G installation commissioning and integration. So he's an expert. I'm delighted that he's agreed to come on the programme today. Mark McFarlane. Hey, Mark, thanks for reaching out and coming on. I've come across you on Facebook before.
Yeah. You've been, to hear you, Richie.
Great to hear you, mate. You've been, over the years, you've had a lot of very interesting things to say about September the 11th and many other things. You're a very interesting guy, so it's lovely to have you on the programme. And thanks for giving us a heads up on what you've done and your experience. So before we talk then about what 5G is, what you see it as being, why you think we have it and where it might be going, you will of course have seen in the last few days, the world has gone a bit crazy about videos made by London Real and David, where the possibility that the 5G switch on might have had something to do with people becoming unwell. And the BBC has picked up on this. YouTube have banned people. I know you take a different perspective, a different point of view, and I'm glad that you're on here to express that. So do you believe that people shouldn't be worried about that? You don't think that there's any correlation between the 5G signal and people getting sick?
No, I don't think so. First off, am I too...
But you're breaking up just a little bit.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, but you were kind of coming in and out there. We were losing you. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to just disconnect there and then very quickly reconnect. It sometimes works. That's a very old... That's a dad dancing fix, that, isn't it? Very dad dancing. Tell you what you'll do. Switch it off and switch it on again. And it might work. And funny enough, sometimes it does work. This is the thing. Failing that, we'll give Mark a call on the phone. Yeah, we were just losing you there briefly, Mark. I hope the signal has improved now. Are you there?
Yeah, so can you hear me now?
I can hear you loud and clear now, my friend. Right.
Okay.
Tell me why you think... Now, I'm told that I've even gotten it wrong about David Icke. Apparently, Icke hasn't said that 5G is responsible. He's put it out there that... it's a possibility, or we shouldn't be dismissive of it. But for those who think it definitely is an issue, why are they wrong?
So I think 5G is an issue. I'm not saying that 5G is a safe technology, but the problem is a lot of people are getting it totally out of context. So they're howling at the moon about 5G giving people coronavirus, and then there's people like me who are now part of the anti-5G movement as an ex-engineer, who are getting made to look like these people that are absolutely adamant because they've seen a YouTube video that it's COVID-19 is caused by 5G. And, going to David Icke, now he has a video, which a lot of people have probably seen, where he speaks about COVID-19 and 5G in the same video. But he's quite, like David Icke quite often is, he's quite careful the way he speaks, so he doesn't quite make the link in the way that he says it is, but he opens up the possibilities there. And my view is, 5G, it's been a constant since April last year when I started doing it. It's been ramping up and ramping up, and the intensity's gone up. There's more 5G than ever, but it doesn't explain why we would have a peak in, say, February in Europe, or rather it starts in February and then it peaks out, they're saying, sometime in April, and then it will just vanish. But then 5G will be getting more and more intense. There'll be more and more 5G coming. So why would you have a synchronized attack of something throughout the whole world, all in the same 3 or 4 months, when 5G is a prevailing thing that will be going out for years and people will be fine apparently in a couple of months regarding this virus. I mean, also there's a fact that 95% at least of this country is 5G free, and 99% of the world at least is 5G free. So none of it really tallies up with it being some form of toxicity causing the sickness. I'm not discrediting the theory. You know, some very credible people have actually come up with a theory of toxicity causing certain sicknesses, and a lot of viruses not quite being viruses because they haven't been isolated, and it's just been a presumption of being a virus and testing being used with false negatives because there were maybe 50 or so things that could trigger a positive, false positive.
Yeah.
So there's about 50 things that can make a false positive with certain tests, like with HIV tests, for example. It's not actually looking for the virus because it's a retrovirus. It's not as easy as that. And it's very difficult they haven't actually found a HIV test as such. So there's such things as pregnancy can give a positive on a HIV test. And this test that they're using at the moment for COVID-19, from what I've been listening to anyway, from certain doctors on the web, is that it's not actually a COVID-19 test at all. But David Icke covers a bit of this in his video.
He does. So, you're very fair. You're very fair, yeah, Mark. You're very fair to point out that. I like that about you. You're very fair to mention that. You know, some fairly credible scientists, they have said that the signal, when you've got one every 12 houses, when you have one for every 12 houses, they've said that this signal then can affect people at cellular level, and it can make people ill in ways maybe that we don't understand. That's very fair of you to say that, because I would be open to the possibility that exposure, you know, relentless exposure to the signal could maybe make people feel breathless and feel, you know, viral. But I'm coming around to your way of thinking that there's no evidence in yet, there's no hard evidence that we are being exposed to a 5G signal in many places at all. And that's why I like what you did with Mark Windows. I've got a new phone. I don't buy these things. I've been with the same bloody provider for years. And yeah, I do spend a lot of money with them because I'm a journalist and I have to make a lot of phone calls. So they do send me, every year, they send me a stonking, cool, latest edition bloody thing, the whole lot. And mine is 5G ready. And there is no 5G signal. There isn't.
Yeah.
At the moment. Not where I am at the moment. So I'm really glad that you said that. You're not closing your mind to it. Not that I should, you know, be glad. You can say whatever the bloody hell you want. But it's because that it's not everywhere yet, 5G, and we're not surrounded by it yet. I think, is that what you're saying? That's why you don't buy the theory that it's got anything to do with COVID-19?
Yeah, that's a big part of it. I mean, anyone can look. As an engineer, I use the postcode tracker for where 5G actually is and where it isn't. I actually use that as an engineer, or I used to, because when you're taking one site down, you need to have a backup network phone. So you need to have 4G as your secondary phone, because when you switch one off to do an upgrade, if you've got no signal at all, you can't actually phone back to the switch. So I know that where they're saying 5G actually is does marry up with where I know that it is. So yeah, it isn't really in many places at all. I live in Kent, and there's only one place in Kent that's got it, and that's near Rochester. It's just on the outskirts of Rochester. Other than that, down on the bottom of Kent Road, if there isn't any. But you know, there's plenty of supposed cases of COVID-19 down here.
Yeah.
So that doesn't tally up. And also, more and more 5G is getting rolled out right now because it's classed as construction, you know, the government's legal definition. So there's no restrictions on it. They're just ploughing forward. I'm still on the WhatsApp group that they use, and yeah, still full complement of engineers rolling it out.
Wow. So they're ploughing it forward now while everybody's locked down. And can I just ask you, because of your background, and you're not working in 5G installation anymore, and we'll talk about that maybe towards the end. You might tell us why you're not working in 5G. I mean, I'm sure we can guess why, but we'll come to that a bit later on. So basically, you must be getting hammered now. on social media, because I suppose people people want to believe desperately, because they know in their heart of hearts that 5G is not going to be good for humanity, and I don't think it will be either, at all, in fact. I've had Chris Busby and lots of people on. But they're desperate to believe that. So a guy like you says, well, hang on a second, it's probably not that. You must be getting dogs abuse.
It's not been as bad as I expected, to be quite honest, because I am giving a lot of other information with it, and I'm trying to be very balanced and impartial, and I'm always saying, yeah, it's not a good thing. The EMF is probably harmful. It's non-ionizing, but it's still affecting you on an energetic level, even if it's not a cellular level, which the scientists are saying, still interfering with your energy pattern. So, I mean, if, not getting new agey here, you can actually see an energy aura with a person looking through particular meters. And this energy is just a resonation of your inner systems functioning. And when EMF comes into contact with this field, it dents the field. So it's caught in an energetic pushback. That's a conflict, an energetic conflict, if you like. You're putting an energy into a person that's obviously creating some sort of conflict. I mean, even that in itself, and you know, someone being affected on an energetic level is enough for me to question the whole thing. So because I presented a lot of this science to the people on my Facebook and social media in general, when I say, don't be silly, of course, COVID-19 is not caused by 5G, they're not as harsh on me, because they can see I'm trying to be balanced and I'm not just one-sided and protecting the industry, because, you know, I don't like the industry and I certainly don't like where things are going. EMF is probably least of our problems compared to where we're going.
Right, now we'll come to that in a few minutes. You've just heard Mark McFarlane there, former telecoms engineer who knows all about this, qualified guy, worked in commissioning installation of 5G, he's worked with 2G, with Wi-Fi technology, he knows his stuff. And he said the harm from the Wi-Fi is only the beginning of what it's going to mean for people further down the road. And we'll come back to that in a minute. Now, when those scientists put that paper together and they said one antenna for every 12 houses, is this how it's going to work? Are we going to see on our streets in Salford every few lampposts or every few telegraph poles are going to have a little transmitter? Is that how it works?
That is actually how it's designed. The topology diagrams that I've seen for Huawei's plans anyway, it does show that. It's further down the road. We're talking years down the road. They want to get the core 5G network installed first, which is sub 4 gigahertz. It peaks out at 3.8 gigahertz. And it's more like 4G at the moment. It's 4G strength, roughly. I think it's about 20% more powerful than standard Huawei 4G, the 3900 Huawei stuff. So it's very, at the moment, the 5G technology is not that harmful. But at the same time, there's a lot of sites that have been there since the 90s. They were assessed as far as their RF output and local residents on 2G standards. And I certainly, when I've done surveys for 3G, 4G and 5G, I've never had it put to me about reassessing any of this. So somewhere that might have just been on the threshold for 2G, now it's got 5G slung in on the same building opposite someone's house. It could be way over the limits and they're just trying to get away with it. So, yeah, so that's a very scary one.
What about those scientists who published that paper back in 2017 when they said that, you know, mobile phone technology anyway, you know, it's harmful, like continuous exposure to it is harmful. It affects the reproductive systems. It causes tumours. Did anybody ever say that to you, Mark, when you entered the industry all those years ago? Were people talking about that back in the day? Because I remember speaking to a guy from Nokia many, many years ago when I was on the radio in Spain. And he said to me, honest to God, he said to me, look, from day one, Richie, we knew that this stuff was harmful. We knew you shouldn't have had your phones up to your ears. We knew you shouldn't be making constant phone calls on these things. So do you agree with those scientists who say that EMF, these radio waves, are harmful to people?
I certainly do. The evidence speaks for itself with long-term studies now where people are getting tumours in their heads, just next to their ears, where the antennas of their phones have been for decades. And the correlation there, it's unmistakable. It's hundreds of percent more prevalent than it was before mobile phones came along. A lot of scientists, doctors, you know, say it's, you know, unarguable that there's an issue. Now, me personally, I've always been a bit concerned. I've always been someone that has hand free kit in, and then it turned out that they were worse than putting a phone to your head at one point because they amplify the signal. So now I'm more of a loudspeaker person. So as an engineer, as someone that understands EMF to, you know, quite a fair extent, I don't want to have it near me. And going back to before when you were talking about having transmitters interval of every 20 meters, I think it says in the documents, that's when we're going to get into the 40 to 60 gigahertz range. So we're going to have very short range transmitters with a very, very high packet density. So the amount of data that we'll be able to go through it compared to, say, the low end of 5G now, which is 800 megahertz, which is very low. And I don't know if you know, the lower the frequency, the less data you can chuck through it, but the more range it's got. So 800 megahertz carries virtually nothing compared to what 40 to 60 gigs can. I understand from the documents that they're talking about making the beam width so narrow between each transmitter, because it basically you're just making a sub network with street lights, if you like. The beams can be so narrow that no one should get anything really coming out to harm them, but then what's the point of them? So that's a bit of a mix up with the whole thing. I don't understand that they're talking in relay via say 60 gigahertz, but in order for someone's phone to be able to transmit communicate with that transmitter, there must be a spillover of the 60 gigahertz hitting people.
There has to be, otherwise they wouldn't be able to make their call or go online or send their data.
Yeah.
And that's where the scientists come in, who say that this is something that is completely different to 4G and it's going to have a profoundly negative effect on people as we go forward. Can I ask, as a telecoms engineer, have you been exposed to a lot of EMF frequency more than most people? And would that concern you? Would that concern
definitely.
You?
It's just the hazard of the job. You accidentally stand in front of an antenna you think's off, but someone switched it on or whatever. But I actually did it to myself last year. I was the last engineer left on site. I was basically the team leader, and there were certain things I just do, like serial numbers, photos, things like that. And then I send off the pack for them to, you know, basically process it and put it on file. And I went in front of a MIMO antenna, 5G antenna, to get the serial numbers, and it was still on. And it took about 30 seconds for me to feel it, but I felt, I can't imagine, I can't really describe it. I felt tingly. I felt really tingly and adrenal. And 5 minutes, 10 minutes after that, I just felt extremely tired. I felt lightheaded. It was shocking. I mean, I was right in front of the thing, to be fair. You know, no member of the public would ever be that close. But I've stood in front of 3G and 4G ones before, and that's not happened. So I don't know if it's the way that the packet density is possibly a big factor, because the 5G antennas, when they're going full swing, and people were logging on and using these things straight away when I was putting sites in. So there would have been people pushing through all this data, and you're talking that's 5 terabytes off one transmitter coming through, rather than, you know, on 4G, maybe half a terabyte. So you've got all of that extra packet density going through the antenna, and the waveform, if you look on an oscilloscope, it's totally different. And that's one thing that I'll say that Mark Steele got right, that it's the actual wavefront is a big difference, even if you're using the same power levels. It's probably one of the only things. But
and translate that. Well, he's been on once or twice over the years with me, so it's nice to have a different perspective on it. That's the whole point of this program. So what Mark said that you agree with, translate that into dumb speak for me. What does that mean for people?
Say you've got a transmitter and it's, you know, pumping out 10 watts of power. Say you've got 4G1 and a 5G1, they're both putting out 10 watts. Say one antenna doing 10 watts on a 4G and one on a 5G doing 10 watts. Because of the actual packet density, if you look at the actual signal on an oscilloscope, which is how you measure wavefronts, it's spiky. It's very, very spiky. And it creates a more dense, basically you've got more bits per second going through. That's the long and short of it. And it has a much more different outcome to, say, a passive 10 watts going through. So if you've got a passive analog signal with not much information going through versus a very, very, very complex 10 watts, then it's absolutely fluctuating you on a cellular level. So I suppose that's the bottom line. It's fluctuating you on a cellular level. It's affecting you on a cellular level, but it's not harming your cells.
According to the scientists. So it's affecting you. It's hitting your cells, and it's constant. And as you quite rightly say, anybody who read the BBC article about the David Icke interview, the BBC article explicitly says that the scientists say that it doesn't affect, it won't break up the cells, it won't do that damage. However, we know that at least 200 other equally qualified, at least in the eyes of the establishment anyway, scientists, they disagree. And they say there's a very good possibility that it will, and that's why we should be worried about 5G. Mark McFarlane is our guest. It's 6:30. He's a qualified man, very much recently involved, as recently as last spring, involved in 5G commissioning installation. So it's really important we have him on the programme. We came in on this at the point we talked about why Mark doesn't believe that the switch on of 5G or the trialling of it is in any way related to coronavirus. I know a lot of my listeners believe that it is. Listen, tough shit, Paddy, as we say on this programme. We get every point of view here. We get every point of view here. I know nothing about this stuff. Mark talks in great detail on his Facebook page, and he's done some excellent stuff with Mark Windows. It's very watchable and very understandable, where he talks about the reasons why we've got to be very concerned about 5G. That's important, and we're going to talk about that now. By the way, Diane, who's been on this programme, by the way, in the past, my friend Diane, who's a trans woman living somewhere between Cork and Waterford. How are you doing, Diane, by the way? Diane is very familiar with all of this, and she wants to point out on Twitter that you're doing a brilliant job of explaining this, especially for anyone who has an engineering background. But I think you're doing a very good job of explaining it for lay people like me as well. So that's a nice comment, Diane. Thank you. Right. What's it about? They tell us unprecedented communication possibilities, downloading and uploading reams of data, speeds we never thought possible. Great for business, great for domestic surfing the web and films and all that. It's absolutely wonderful. 5G, wonderful. But it isn't. You don't believe it is. You believe that it will be used for something entirely different, or it will be used predominantly for something which people don't understand. The floor is yours. Why are you concerned about 5G and what it is possible to do in the coming years? Go ahead.
I'm concerned because over the years I've been someone who's been, some people called me a conspiracy theory, you know, conspiracy theorist back in the mid-2000s when I really started getting into it. And before that, 2002, 2003, I was a 9/11 truther. So I've tried to see the bigger picture regarding things. And I started watching David Icke stuff, you know, quite early on. So I was already of a certain mindset. So I was always vigilant for certain things appearing in the technological world, whether it be at work or just devices coming up here and there. And I've just seen a pattern, and I've seen the documents, which don't go all the way down the road, regarding what's going to be rolled out. But I've certainly seen documents regarding how functionality is going to occur with the Internet of Things. They just don't go into massive detail of what these things will be. From a lot of documents that have been put out in the public domain regarding what might go out there, there's lots of people that are afraid that 5G is an energy weapon, or it's going to shoot them with, you know, laser beams, and, you know, going to be used to kill people that the system doesn't like. I don't believe that at all. They're not going to use transmitters that statically sit in there to do any of that. It's as simple as developing technology. Initially, we're going to have maybe driverless cars, delivery drones for Amazon, and then things will evolve. People will accept them, and then we'll move on to surveillance drones being accepted. And then before you know it, we've got enforcement drones. And before you know it, we've got armed enforcement drones. And you know how these people work. They know exactly how to do, coin David Icke, the totalitarian tiptoe, yeah, and get to that point. And they will probably have people waving them on and cheering them on, clapping at 8 o'clock for these enforcement drones. And, you know, it's just a very slippery slope of surveillance. I mean, we're gonna have surveillance on us constantly, because even now, the police have somehow got some sort of authority passed because of COVID to do a bit of tracking on people. So they're even teetering with this now. So your personal communication device, which you're going to have in your pocket or maybe biometrically implanted to you by a certain point, the police, whoever, are going to know exactly where you are, what you're doing, where you've been, how fast you were driving, what you had for dinner last Tuesday. And it's all going to be with the help of this technology, I believe.
You've answered my question. Brilliant question, because I was going to ask you. These things, yeah, they want to do, these drones, all of the surveillance, yeah, stuff, the mapping of people's homes and what people are doing, I'm fascinated by that. And as you were talking, I was thinking, could they do that with fourth generation or third generation technology? But you say they can't, that this next leap to 5G is vital for what you've just described.
Yes, so it's vital for a few reasons. One of them is 5G, it basically is 4G technology, it is LTE, but with a lot of major differences put into the infrastructure. And the biggest one is a latency. So say you've got driverless cars or any type of device that needs to be utterly responsive without any issues ever. It needs to have like the tiniest latency imaginable. So that's what 5G is. So if you've got a driverless car and it's working in real time through the 5G network, obviously it's got to have minimal latency. But also you've got, at the moment, you'll have one cell that's connected to the phone, for example, on 4G, and then you'll have two other cells that are monitoring it in case that cell goes, but they take quite a long time to kick in. With 5G, you're going to have several cells at the same time all interacting in real time, as if they're all controlled, but they will all be controlled in it, because it'll be like triangulated control. So you'll have three different transmitters all controlling it.
So the car can make instant decisions. So a raccoon runs across the road, the car can deal with that, but also deal with thousands of other, maybe hundreds of thousands of other data points in milliseconds, basically.
Yeah. So that's the idea. Obviously, onboard sensors would deal with a raccoon running out, for example, but the onboard sensors are working in conjunction with all of the information and data that's happening in the area. You know, say there's a murder in one place, it tells the car to go somewhere else. There's so many reasons why it has to have ultra reliable connectivity, which 4G just couldn't do. It's not reliable enough in that way. Speed-wise, they could do it, but you wouldn't have the capacity to do it, because things like driverless cars, would use a hell of a lot of bandwidth. So you can have, even if everyone started watching YouTube videos of cats at the same time on their 4G devices, it crashed the network. It just relies on people not using much capacity at any given time. But of course, when you've got the Internet of Things, everything will be connected all the time, or most things will be connected all the time. So much more bandwidth required that the 4G network just wouldn't
couldn't
be
do it. So by things being connected all the time, Mark, and by the way, folks, it's former telecoms engineer and expert in 5G installation, Mark McFarlane, who's on the line. So Mark, by everything being connected, it even goes to devices in people's houses. So it could be obviously a person's television, that goes without saying, but it might be a person's heating system, their gas heating system, yeah, their boiler, even their fridge. Is that right?
Well, yeah, that's not even future technology, is it, really? That's technology of Wi-Fi today. I mean, ultimately, what we have as Wi-Fi, that will get phased out eventually, and we'll just be using the one network, I think. I know all this money's been spent on 21CN by BT, but I think ultimately you go a few decades down the line and it's all going to be via 5G and just one network. And yeah, your fridge, your microwave, your heating, but you know, you've got things like your smartwatch. They'll be connected. You're going to have your usual devices connected. Your car will always be connected. It will lay idle and it might not have as much data to process when it's set in the driveway, but it's always going to be communicating. Everything's going to be connected. It's quite a brave new world.
And nobody in the world will have so much as a modicum of privacy. Privacy as a concept will basically disappear. There won't be such a thing as privacy.
I can't see how there will be. I mean, you might get to a point where you can't even lock yourself in a cupboard and have privacy because your biometrics have been monitored. You know, it could get to that point, couldn't it?
Oh, Jesus. And we talk about artificial intelligence. Is there a capacity or will... I'm going to start using, you know, crappy, you know, dad dancing speak here now because I don't know anything about any of this stuff. But what about artificial intelligence programs or machines that become autonomous? Is there, because I'm getting obviously tweets from people asking these questions, and mates of mine are texting me. I've got bloody emails coming in as well. They're fascinated by this. Where does artificial intelligence, that is a program that learns for itself and makes decisions on its own, how is that technology related to 5G? Or is that too broad a question?
I would say that, I mean, it would be very bad design-wise to not incorporate 5G with artificial intelligence, because if it's connected to any network, unless it's completely sentient, and you know, it's some odd piece of technology that isn't connected to anything, which I can't see happening much, then 5G is going to be the method of connectivity. And you know, when you talk about artificial intelligence, drones are going to be the first form of that. I think they will learn. There are certain things you can't program a drone with, certain things it can't tap into the network and acquire. It might, you know, realize that there's a particular airflow at a particular place. It will learn that. It gets sent off balance at a particular place. It will know that for next time. It will tell the other drones. And it will start with that kind of thing, I believe, with things that we can't tell them, but they learn for themselves, but they don't tell us back because they don't speak our language back. So there'll be a hell of a lot of artificial intelligence devices learning a lot of things that we don't even know they're learning, because we're not programming them. We're programming them to learn, to not, you know, to protect themselves, to get on with their job. But we're not programming them to give us a full itemized list of all the things they've learned, because the programming language goes one way. It doesn't seem to come back the other way. From all the, you know, AI readings that I've done, it doesn't seem to work that way. So they're learning a lot of things that we don't know about. I mean, I'm not saying they're going to try and take over the world or anything, but it's interesting.
But still, but you know, obviously that was the next question. It sounds ridiculous even when you say it out loud, when you say Skynet, for example. but why not? You know, look, you won't probably be aware of this, but a couple of years ago, one of NASA's most public scientists came on the program. I'm still in touch with. I'm still in touch with him. He's going to come on the program again. Now, I know nobody believes NASA, never a straight answer and all of that. But he came on and he was lovely. His name was Rich Terrile. He's credited, a very famous guy with discovering certain moons in our solar system. And I asked Rich about this, and Rich said, "I must get that interview and play it again someday. Just play the whole thing in its entirety." He said, "Yeah, that's definitely going to happen. Machines are going to learn at this rate to the point where." You know, they'll make decisions for themselves. And when I put the Skynet question to him, he said, well, you couldn't rule anything out, but my tip would be, he said, my belief would be that the machines would just get bored here and would head off out to the infinite universe and the millions of galaxies and go off doing their own thing. And I jokingly said to him, well, you know, we might be a bit naive in thinking that, But so it's not ridiculous to mention Skynet because
it's not.
Is this a singularity? This is the singularity you're talking about, isn't it? The point at which the machine becomes completely self-aware and begins to grow and expand and develop itself and making decisions on its own. I mean, how could you possibly know what to predict? You couldn't.
You couldn't. I mean, it's Star Trek, you know, they're on the Enterprise and they say, what type of life form is it, Captain? And it's silicon-based life form. It's, you know, some artificial intelligence has buggered off from people making it on one planet. It's gone exploring. It's entirely possible. And all it takes is for a misinterpretation of what we mean versus what they interpret. We could say protect the human species at all cost, and then the computer or the AI network, as it would be, they'd probably all be, you know, part of one internal network, one network at that point. They end up to interpret as, well, there's 6 billion people on Earth. They're all going to kill each other unless we kill 2 billion.
Yeah.
So they're doing what they think is logical based upon what we've asked them to do. So they're taking the decision in their own hands.
A guy, I mean, it must be crazy for a guy like you to be talking about this stuff, you know. I was thinking that when I was watching you with Mark. By the way, folks, if you get a chance, check out windowsontheworld.net. Mark's a brilliant forensic reporter. He's very, very good, Mark. And he's great at explaining, you know, what's happening with climate change and how all of these things are all interconnected. He does a terrific job of it. windowsontheworld.net. It must be mind-blowing for you to be watching this happen with your own training and knowledge and having to accept. Was there, at any time, was there a part of you that fought with yourself? In other words, you were saying to yourself, nah, this can't be right, really. It's just bloody good technology. It's just good stuff for our connectivity. Was there a point when you were having an internal argument about it?
Not really.
No, you knew from day one, basically.
Well, 3G, when that came out, I thought, oh, this is brilliant. I've got mobile internet. Yeah. And then 4G, I was already very much questioning the safety of EMF in general anyway. I don't know if you've seen it. There's a documentary called Beings of Energy, like Beings of Frequency, that's it. It was, came out in 2011 on YouTube, that's why I found it, YouTube, and it goes very much into depth about various EMF, and it gets credible people, very credible people, interview doctors and scientists about EMF in general, and it's still the best thing I've seen on EMF, and even though it's so old, but it goes into 4G, and 4G was just about to come out at that point. And I was concerned, a little bit concerned, but yeah, still got on with rolling it out. And mainly I was repairing it back in those days. So I was a maintenance engineer for Ericsson, working on the Vodafone network. So if something went wrong, I'd go out and fix it. So I wasn't really rolling out anything until the last 4 years. Yeah, really, the last three years, I've really started to question where things are going, and because of people like me. So I just had to say, look, what am I going to do here? I can't carry on doing this. I feel terrible on all levels, running myself into the ground, going to London and doing the work, but also morally, what the hell am I doing? So
you're
I went out and I thought, well, I'm just going to document as much as I can, get as much data as I can, so I can bring it out and stop this forever. I mean, I now own a cocktail bar, which I've had for 2 years, and that's what I do.
And how are you getting? How's that going now with the lockdown? Are you worried about that? How is it affecting you and your staff?
Well, at the moment everyone's furloughed, so no one's complaining. You know, getting 80% of their salary. As far as staff goes, as far as I go with the bar, because obviously they give you a grant that you'd have to pay back to keep things ticking over. But as soon as I'm in a reasonably good position compared to a lot of people, but if I go past 3 months of not being able to trade, then I'm in trouble, and a lot of other places would already have had to make the decision to pack in, I think. So it's big. I don't think we're going to go that far, to be quite honest, just using my own, you know, research and things.
Yeah, let's be positive. I don't think so either. I think they're going to realise next week, you know, they're going to extend it over the bank holiday Monday and into next week. But I think after that, they're going to realise that people are not going to have it. And I think it is going to be eased up. And I hope the business will be okay, mate. And your staff have to understand it's not a problem if you're making. Nothing you could do about it, you know. It's maddening to me, but we won't talk about that today. We've got about five, 6 minutes left. I know you're going to come back in the very near future. I'm going to ask you back very, very soon to pick this up again. But ultimately, the Internet of Things, a future world where people are monitored from, well, basically not from morning till night, but where they're monitored non-stop, a world in which people accept, you know, implantable technology and maybe even embrace it. You know, we talked about the drones, we talked about the artificial intelligence aspect of it. This is all very worrying, and I believe you're absolutely right. I've read a lot of stuff as well. I certainly don't have your insight, I don't have your training, but I've been able to read quite a lot of stuff on it, and from people like yourself who've worked in the industry, and I believe you are absolutely right. So I had a question there, it's just gone away now, and it was kind of segueing towards something else, but it was important.
Was it going to be about transhumanism or posthumanism?
Yeah, it was going to be about transhumanism. You got me in one. You can read my mind. You're using it on me, is what you're doing,
yeah,
there, McFarlane.
Yeah, I put an implant in you.
You put an implant in me. So when David, I recommended Phantom Self by David Icke last night. I reckon in the last 10 years, it's his best work in the last 10 years. Because taking a lot of what's been put out there officially, he did a great job of knitting it together. And I think It's pretty much where we're going. Is that it? A kind of a post-human world? Is that what you feel we're looking down the road? That's where we might be.
Yeah, and no, I think people will embrace it. I don't know quite what angle the overlords or whatever you want to call them are going to use to make people embrace it. But I mean, look at what they're getting people to do right now. They're getting people to no one's above suspicion. Everyone's possibly going to kill them, you know, but at least 2 meters away, face masks, everything, filthy looks for going anywhere near them. It's, you know, imagine what people might be convinced to do if people are told that it's something's of a benefit to them. I mean, mobile phones, they don't make our lives better, I don't think, than, you know, 40 years ago, people aren't any happier than then.
No, we're not.
Well done. Told to use them, and now they make our lives worse, I think.
Well said, mate. Well said. I remember the day of running up the road about 200 metres away from the house to the phone box with a 10p piece to ring me mate if I needed to, because he had a phone, and we didn't have a phone in our house. And I remember thinking, when we did get the phone, just the old-fashioned landline, the old Alexander Graham Bell. I remember thinking at that time, what a nuisance that was, because now people could ring me and find me. This is true, honest to God, man, I mean that. I thought, what a pain in the arse that is. Me mother going, Richard, Richard, up the stairs. I'm like, piss off, you know. Not to my mum, like, but piss off to whoever's calling me. You can't go anywhere now. We are contactable, we are followable, we are trackable, traceable. Non-stop. They've not made our lives better. No, they have not. You're absolutely right.
No, they really haven't. I've been trying to plan my way out of having one for ages, but there's always that one thing that, oh no, I can't now because of WhatsApp. You know, I can't have WhatsApp on a 2G phone. Oh well, there goes me just having a 2G phone. Yeah. You know, Yeah, it feels like I'm trapped. I feel like I'm addicted to technology myself because I've been, you know, I've had a phone since the 90s, 2G phone. I've got the first iPhone that came out. So I'm really down this rabbit hole of being a very bad case of being locked into the mobile.
You're not. They made it indispensable. There's nothing you can do about it. I realise this myself. They have made it impossible to be without. And that's why I was very interested in you talking earlier on about the Internet of Things and how the phone will be, well, until they start putting implantables in people, the phone will be that central kind of focal point for every person. Just before we go, we've got about 2.5 minutes left. Just want to remind our listeners where we came in. Mark has spoken very eloquently there, broadly and very eloquently, about why he is very, very concerned about the possibilities that come about due to the development of 5G technology. He hasn't at all dismissed the human health impact or consequences of it. He hasn't, and he's nodded towards the scientists who talk about the cellular damage, as well as pointing out there are scientists who say that it can't damage the cells. Mark doesn't believe that there's any hard evidence that 5G technology is somehow related to this so-called pandemic. And I agree with Mark, there isn't any evidence. I've looked bloody hard into it as well. And if I'm going to be totally honest, I was maybe looking from the point of view of hoping to find evidence, maybe. And yeah. I had to give myself a slap in the face because I'm supposed to be, you know, an objective journalist. I believe 5G will be deadly in terms of the cost it will have on our health, but also in terms of our freedom and everything else that Mark talked about, transhumanism. But I don't think there's any hard evidence that you know, it had anything to do with what's going on now. I think you made a good case for that, mate. You know, I'll give you the final word on all of this, Mark. You can take 60 seconds, 90 seconds if you want. And I just want to thank you for coming on. It's been great to meet you, mate. And in your little summing up, in your little final word, do mention where people can find you. Give us your Facebook name and details so that people can follow you on Facebook straight away. Go ahead.
Okay, yes. So, one thing, since we were talking about transhumanism and how people might accept it, I started thinking, I thought it before, because as millennials that have grown up with mobile phones, we're going to be talking about maybe an event where there's lots of millennials that have panic attacks when they can't log onto the network with their phone. There's no Wi-Fi or no data. I mean, I think that will be something that will usher in body tech, you know, biotech, whatever. So that will be the gateway. But yeah, I'm going to go and think about this one. But if anyone wants to get hold of me on Facebook, I'm Mark Adam McFarlane. That's McFarlane, MacFarlane. I'm happy to talk to people.
Let's do the transhumanism thing next time you come on. Because I knew that would happen. We do this in two or three parts anyway, so we'll get you back on. What I'll do is, when we're putting the holding image on the YouTube later on, I'll make sure that your Facebook link is on the holding image, and I'll put it in the notes as well for anybody who missed it there, because I do want you to go on to Mark's Facebook page and read his posts there, and because he publishes a lot of information there to support what he is saying, and it's industry stuff, so you should be looking at it and sharing it with people as well. Thanks for your time today, mate. I really enjoyed listening to you. And I sincerely
thank you very much for having me, Richard.
Not at all, buddy. And I hope you'll come back on. What are we now? We're approaching mid-April. Let's say we'll get you back on in May, maybe towards the second or third week in May, and we'll talk about transhumanism.
Yep, brilliant. Look forward to it.
Thanks, Mark. Lovely to have you on the programme. Thank you, mate. That was Mark McFarlane, who spent 2 decades in the telecoms industry and has worked in commissioning the installation of 5G, and he was on the horns of a moral dilemma, and he walked away from it. And he's just been explaining to us there on today's Richie Allen Show why he's not convinced that the technology has anything to do with COVID-19, but he's certainly not saying that it can't have very serious health consequences for people. But he went on to talk about why he's really concerned about 5G and what it is capable of doing to the human race in the coming few years and in the coming decade. Thanks so much to Mark. Thanks to Gerald Salente, who graced us with his presence from Kingston, New York, in the first hour of the programme. TrendsResearch.com. If you want to subscribe to the journal, top man is Gerald. You and I will talk again tomorrow at 5 o'clock UK time. I've been asked about Easter. I will be on Sunday morning. I always do Sunday View on Easter Sunday. Always. So I will be with you. First of all, I'll be with you tomorrow night. But I will be with you on Sunday at 11 for Easter Sunday as usual. Don't worry about that. But of course, I won't be with you on Monday. Easter Monday is a bank holiday. And I like me bank holiday, so I do. All right? And shut up about it. Alright. You look after yourselves and one another. Thanks for listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Bye for now. See you tomorrow at 5. Until then, the wonderful Four Tops. Bye now.